At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Welcome to Come to the Brink. I'm Zoe Flowers, and this is a space for those of us navigating profound life changes like loss, trauma, caregiving, and transformation. It's about what happens when everything you thought was solid crumbles beneath you and you're forced to rebuild. If you've ever felt like you're standing on the brink, this is the space for you. Welcome.
The transformative fire and right action. The bear shows great compassion toward the woman, allowing her to pluck one of his hairs. She hurries back down the mountain, practicing all the gestures, songs, and praises that spontaneously rose out of her as she climbed the mountain. She comes running to the healer, so anxious. She might have said, "Look, I did it. I did what you told me. I endured, I triumphed. The old healer, who is all so kind, takes a moment, lets the woman savor her accomplishment, and then throws the hard-won hair into the fire. The woman is stunned. "What has this crazy healer done?" "Go home," says the healer. "Practice what you have learned." In Zen, the moment the hair is thrown into the fire and the healer speaks her simple words, that is the moment of true enlightenment. Notice that enlightenment does not occur on the mountain. It occurs when, by burning the hair of the crescent moon bear, the projection of magical cure is dissolved. We all face this issue, for we all hope that if we work hard and have high holy quest, we will come up with a something, a substance, a material, something or other that will flash, make everything orderly forever. But that is not the way it works. It works exactly the way it is rendered in the story. We can have all the knowledge in the universe, and it comes down to one thing: practice. It comes down to going home and step by step implementing what we know as often as necessary and as for as long as possible, or forever, whichever one comes first. It is very reassuring to know that when one is in a burgeoning rage, one knows precisely and with the skill of a craftswoman what to do about it. Wait it out, release illusions, take it for a climb on the mountain, speak with it, respect it as a teacher. We are given many markers in this story, many ideas about coming to balance, making patience, giving the enraged one kindness and time to get over his rage through introspection and questing. There is an old saying: before Zen, mountains were mountains and trees were trees. During Zen, mountains were thrones of the spirits and trees were the voices of wisdom. After Zen, mountains were mountains and trees were trees. And that is another reading from Women Who Run With The Wolves, Clarissa Pinkola Estes. Welcome, welcome back.
Thank you to come to the brink
with Zoe Flowers. And today's conversation is about exploring the spaces between belonging and outsiderhood, wellness and chronic illness, grief and healing. My guest, Skyaris.
Yep.
Okay, describes themselves as a sinister spitfire creatrix whose voice was always a bit too loud, hair too unruly, and spirit too wild to ever fit neatly into a box. As a neurodiverse synesthete, Sky has spent their life exploring liminal spaces, margins, and what it means to feel other. They've channeled their deep experiences into powerful creative works like their memoir, Still Moving, which chronicles their first 3 years navigating long COVID, and Sync Fire, a concept album celebrating synchronous fireflies. Sky's mission is to normalize the full spectrum of grief, not only its isolating depths, but its transformative potential for deeper love and connection. We did it. You're here.
Yay, I'm here. We made it.
Welcome.
Thank you. I'm so glad to be here.
I'm so glad we're here. And I feel like that reading just is the perfect introduction.
Scar Clan, right? Isn't that the name of that chapter?
I think so.
I think so.
I think so. Yeah. And you know, I just randomly pick based on the, well, it's not random, but it's picked based on the person. So
yeah. I love it.
That's so
it's
good.
It's very relevant. I use scar analogies all the time with grief, especially.
Yeah. The minute,
it's a good analogy for a lot of things, but it's definitely a good one for grief. So,
well, let's delve into it. Let's just start at the beginning. Who was young Sky?
Young Sky. Oh my goodness. Well, kind of like the person in the bio, the description in the bio, right?
Yeah.
Very unruly, very, you know, the nasty way that people describe like feminine, like femme kids or girls is like bossy and opinionated, but you know, boys are like assertive and clear and determined. So, you know, definitely someone who did not fit the molds that I was given most of the time.
Yeah.
And still to some degree, probably, but I'm in better spaces now. So I don't feel that as acutely as I did.
Yeah.
And young me was also just very, I still am very curious. You know, I don't have like, I'm terrible at favorites, for example. I can't do favorite anything because I'm curious about all the things.
Okay.
Yeah. Very literary inclined, like book inclined, music inclined, nature inclined.
Did you feel like you were in touch with your magic? So you were very curious. So were you spending time in
Absolutely.
Movies and
totally. I got bullied a lot, so I didn't have a lot of, you know, peers and like human friends. So I was definitely out in the world finding friends and kinship there.
Yeah.
And also I grew up in a, like, it's kind of hard to describe now because my family and my parents are not evangelical Christians, but it was a very like Christian household, you know, like we went to church two or three times a week, no questions asked, like it. And it was something that I never wanted and I never believed in, but I didn't get a choice for so long.
Yeah.
And so I ended up, I think, in some ways, kind of moving that energy and kind of finding my own spaces of like creating, you know, ritual spaces and finding like magical things to do.
Yeah.
So in that way, I was very in touch with it. And I also realized at a very young age when I told some adults one time about some of it and I saw their faces get really freaked out. And it was like, oh, so this isn't safe for me to tell people. Like, this has to be something that I hide. It has to be something secret. You know, and it really wasn't. And so in that way, I got kind of disconnected.
Okay.
You know?
Okay.
And it took a long time to kind of come back around as an adult to really embrace those things. Not because I ever thought that they were bad, but at a certain point, just life got busy and I was in college and, you know, just a lot of things fell away because other things had a higher priority. You know?
Was it like a knowing that made the adults uncomfortable? Was it because I have memories of having conversations.
Yeah, I think a lot of us go through that.
Yeah, I think it's like, how do you know that?
Yeah, I think it's a lot of things, right? I think some of it is for people who genuinely, you know, see that stuff as a sign of evil, for example.
Yes.
That it's very like triggering and uncomfortable because they believe that it's evil, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And I can see why there would be that reaction. I think in some cases it was, again, I think there are a lot of gendered layers to this, right? Of like a girl saying this stuff that was like so kind of heretical probably for some of them.
Yeah.
And being, you know, I think if I had been a boy, I might've been a little more rewarded for thinking outside the box, you know, but a lot of those spaces are so gendered around control.
Yeah.
With girls that it was like, oh, this is terrible. Be quiet. That's awful. You're, you know, something's wrong with you.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Do you want to talk a little bit about the section of the book and how that kind of relates?
The section of the book
that I read from that you said that you
Oh, of Scar Clan, you mean?
Yeah. who might not know.
Sure, just like how I relate it to like grief and all of that. I think that for me, I mean, there are just so many layers to these stories that she tells, right?
No, it's so good.
So I could go on and on and on about it. But I think for me, the piece that really has been sticking with me the most, and I think I lean into the most, is this idea of the journey was actually the purpose. Like, we're given the purpose of like, go get the hair from the bear. That's the task. But actually, the task is the journey to get it and the journey to return. That item isn't actually important, right? The item, like the hair, represents something. But this idea that the journey is actually the thing, right? But if you tell somebody, just go on this journey that's dangerous and whatever, they'll be like, no, I don't want to. There's no point. And then when we're given this task,
This quest to go on.
exactly. And I think that, in a lot of like fairy tales and stories, there's like the quest and you get something, and like that there is an actual like experience or material object at the end that's really important. But what I like about this story is that the material object is really just there to be a thing. It isn't actually that the hair is so important. The hair is destroyed immediately once she returns it. And so I think it's a good, especially when thinking about grief and hardship, that getting through the journey is something,
Getting through
getting through the journey,
and
like just living through the experience is something. It's
we
not
don't.
nothing to just do it. And I'm interrupting you, so go.
Oh, okay, it's okay. We don't mark it. Is all I was going to
Yes.
say, right? We don't value the journey.
Right. Yeah, and it's kind of like, I think it makes me think a lot about, when you look at people who they get like a tattoo after a certain experience, right? Or like cultures that have scarification, which is, I mean, the literal thing it's like in the story, Scar Clan. But why those things deserve to be marked if you want to mark them. And oftentimes, a journey like I describe in my book of having long COVID, or just when we go through different experiences of grief, a lot of times we're not given this advance notice of like, here's this object. It's going to represent a journey, but you don't know. We kind of go through the experience, and it's not until later that we even see the journey or can kind of recognize it. So I think it's a good, I like that story in the sense of going on this arduous quest. But actually, the thing that we're told was really just kind of the, just the like, what's the word? Just kind of the motivation almost, or like the task given, but that's not really the purpose.
Not the perfect. I mean, and I think we might have talked about this in our first conversation. I can't remember now, but thinking about COVID and your book Still Moving is about your journey with long COVID. And one of the things that I felt early on was that in the United States in particular, we were going to struggle with COVID because of the, rugged individualism
For sure.
that's so deeply woven into our culture.
For sure.
And then when it was quote unquote over, the rush to go back to normal, the commercials about going back to normal, and
Right.
many of us were saying, we need a grief ritual. We should have had grief
Yes.
rituals. So, I would just love if you could share what life was like for you a bit pre-COVID and then how it shifted.
Oh my.
You can even remember because it's
Yeah, no, I
literally like
can,
a portal that we all
the
went through.
gist. Pre-COVID, I was a, I've lived with chronic illness since I was very young, like preteens. So in some sense, I've always dealt with a certain degree of health challenges. But within that, pre-COVID, I felt very healthy. It took a lot of vigilance with like being on a pretty regimented sort of like sleep, dietary, it took a lot of attention to stay healthy, but it felt, by that point, I'd been doing it for so many years, it felt very ingrained and natural, and I just felt very active as far as a creative person and a life of the mind and a social life and just being able to be out in the world and kind of, I had the luxury, the privilege of being very able-bodied, and now I'm grateful that thinking and breathing aren't hard anymore. Because they were for a long time, and I thought for a while maybe they would always be hard, that maybe that was just going to be life indefinitely.
Okay.
So I feel very grateful that I can think and I can breathe, and I have like certain characteristics and sort of side effects of a brain injury, but fortunately for me, it doesn't feel like it's my powers of reasoning. Like, I definitely have memory problems sometimes, but I fatigue very easily. I take multiple naps a day, and if I don't, it's a bad scene after about 2 or 3 days of that. I just have a very small, window of capacity and window of tolerance. Like if I go to the grocery store, that might be the big activity for the day. And I try to still be active and do things, but it's all very scaled back, and my social life is very quiet, partly because I don't want to do a lot of things indoors if it's a busy indoor thing. Like I'm still masking, in grocery stores, and if I go to restaurants, I try to go to things that are outside. So it's a quieter life in some ways. So yeah, I mean, and I feel there was a time when I did really grieve all those changes. Like it was a hard adjustment in some ways. And I've also been someone who I feel like I've lived a dozen lives in some ways already just throughout my life. And so I do have experience with sort of letting things go, that phase is over, and now we're on to the next phase. So I've really tried to embrace that, and just I have so little energy that I really am try to be very selective on what it gets burned on. That it's important to grieve, and I think it's important to like let that energy process, and for me, recognize when it could just move into rumination, right? Or when it could just sort of prolong depression. But it's tricky. It's hard, for sure.
What are some of the things that you did? Well, first of all, I'm curious about how you knew that you had long COVID.
Yeah, great question. This is all in my book for people if you end up reading it. I'm giving you a little bit of spoilers, but
Yeah,
like it isn't the
don't
most
that's
interesting
what.
part in my opinion. So
Okay,
like
good.
don't I basically got very sick in November of 2019, and it was all kinds of weird respiratory flu things. And I've had respiratory issues my whole life, and it felt like this illness that was just weirder and more intense than anything I'd ever had, which I hear a lot of people say about just any sort of COVID experience. So I just thought at the time I had this weird bout of flu. It didn't make sense, but also I've had weird respiratory things my whole life. And then it just lingered and lingered and lingered. And then, early 2020, when we started getting reports and news from Europe about COVID, I thought, God, a lot of that really tracks. And then kind of late 2019 into 2020, and then just kind of through the end of 2020 into 2021, my migraines were really activated, like in a much more intense way than I've ever had in my life. And COVID, if people don't know, is actually, it's an immuno kind of virus. It's not like we think of it as a flu and a respiratory thing, but for a lot of people, it's side effects and conditions that are really much more like autoimmune related. It doesn't have to just be a respiratory thing or a flu thing in kind of the traditional way. But what I've found over the years is that my experience in a lot of ways is very typical for long haulers, especially for people who have pre-existing stuff, that COVID is often, there's a resurgence of something that people had when they were younger, or there's this intensifying of what people already have. So in some ways, I was kind of more vulnerable at that time. And no, I was not, I was not masking out in a grocery store
Well,
in
yeah,
November
20, what about
2019. Like,
2019? Like
yeah,
people didn't,
no one was thinking about it then.
right.
So yeah, so that's how, because when I was at my sickest, COVID tests were for like celebrities and healthcare workers in 2020. Like I feel like people have forgotten some of these things, like because all these, the world has been so intense the last few years. But at the time, I was never at a point where, I needed a respirator, or I was like on the brink of death or anything like that. And I felt like to go to the doctor was just going to be taking up resources where other people were in much more desperate circumstances. So I really didn't I didn't seek medical attention, partly because hardly anyone even knew that long COVID existed in 2020.
Right.
And then also just it didn't seem like helpful, you know. And I was
Right.
gonna take away resources from people who
Yeah.
were really like deeply ill and needed the resources. So
Yeah, because there was that time. I mean, again, it's kind of like time warp, but there was
right.
like that several blocks, you know, several
Yes.
months of you couldn't get tests. We nothing about a vaccine, even if
Oh,
you
yeah. You know, and
couldn't
just
take
all
cough
the stuff
medicine
with
and being
people in
back
the
home.
ER for hours waiting
Yeah.
around, you know, it just was a
Yeah.
whole, it was a mess. And
Yeah.
so,
It
yeah,
definitely was.
it was.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
It definitely was. And so what were some of the ways that you have before the long COVID, what are some of the ways that you've moved through grief? What are some of the modalities that you've used?
I am a big fan of finding spaces where the energy gets to move, right? So I think anything can work, right? It's just a question of what people are suited to doing. But there have been times when I have really totally immersed myself in my work, like my job. And sometimes that was a way of just not wanting to be alone, you know, and like cry all day. But then also, I think being alone and crying all day is helpful, you know.
Sure.
So I've done a lot of extremes, you know, where I've like completely kind of numbed out and like gotten myself swept up in something that was totally different and unrelated. And then there have been times when I have just kind of ignored the whole world and shut myself off and just been, you know, listening to sad music and watching sad movies and reading sad books, and, you know, all the things, right? And I think one of the biggest struggles sometimes is feeling like finding spaces and being with people who can really hold the space. You know, a lot of people are very uncomfortable with grief. And I get it because it's hard, you know, it's a hard thing to hold space for. But yeah, I think culturally we're very, it's something I talk about in my grief circles a lot. I think we're culturally kind of Western capitalist,
Yeah.
patriarchal, et cetera. We're very grief illiterate, you know, and so it can be hard to be in a space where, for me, I think the best thing that I can get and the best thing that I can give to people who are grieving is just validation, you know, that just, I'm sorry you're feeling this way, you know, keep crying, you know, whatever it is, right? Like, do you need some coffee? Do you know,
Yeah.
does somebody need to do your laundry? You know, whatever it is. But so often what we're taught is we need to fix people and we need to make them feel better. And I think that for me, for sure, is not helpful at all. And for a lot of people I work with, I think often they come to me because they don't want to be told to calm down or just cheer up or, you know. So yeah, I think for me, the things that I turn to are spaces that let me just be present and move the energy in the ways that feel good in that moment, you know.
So speaking of your work, how did you get, talk a little bit about it and how you got into it?
The grief, as far as grief circles.
Yeah.
Well, I'm a musician and I've been a musician basically my whole life. And so musical spaces ultimately can be a space for anything, right? Like you can go to a concert, right? And it's like, oh, I love this musician. I'm gonna have a great time. But also some people are there maybe thinking about, oh my gosh, my best friend and I love this artist, and you know, she died a couple years ago, and here I am in my grief, but also having fun, right? Like, so for me, musical spaces can hold really anything. You know, if you're noticing the people there, some people are just, you know, blissed out, having a great time. Some people are maybe carrying some stuff that's a little bit more complex. So it's something that I've always been comfortable with, you know, this idea of just having a space where people are present and expressing themselves in some way. And then a friend here who's an herbalist, her name's Kelby. She and I, you know, we're kind of neighbors. We live near each other, and she's been doing a lot of personal grief work. And so we were like, yeah, let's do the thing. You know, we both had been thinking about it a lot independently, but it's really nice. It's a space where people share, and it's validation, right? It's not a fix. It's not, you should cheer up. And then we close with really ambient music that I play. So.
Was this something that you, how long have you been running these circles?
Not very long, like starting this year.
Oh, okay.
And we both have done, kind of independently things similar to this,
Okay.
but sort of the combined field. She's a like an herbalist and an energy healer, and just is really good at, if you've worked with people who do that kind of thing, just holding the energy in the room.
Yeah.
Like I'm doing it in a certain way instrumentally, but she's really the person kind of sitting with people individually and moving the energy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How are you seeing grief show up for people in your circles?
All kinds of ways. I think grief is something that, we sort of use it interchangeably with sadness, right? And it's true. It is often sadness, but I think that grief cuts across to anything, And one of the things that I tell people all the time, and it's always true for me as well, is that sometimes grief is rage. Sometimes grief is just like spitting mad at the world, at whatever it is. Sometimes grief is being really numb, and feeling detached. Like I look at my own experiences, one of which I talk about in my book, that it was a really intense thing, and it's something that I feel like I'm just now getting to process, getting to like a point where I can hold the experience without totally falling apart. And it's been 3 years, over 3 years. And I've been through all, I mean, I was in total despair. I was in so much rage. I've been totally numb about it. Like all the things, and so I think that depending on what people are going through in the rest of their lives, what the nature of the relationship could be, in terms of if you lose a person, especially the nature of the relationship, I think often impacts the grief. And then also just people have grief about the world, like looking at the news cycle and paying attention to what's happening in conflict regions, that it's hard to be human. It's hard to witness those things.
We use the language of holding space and holding energy, but there may be people listening who are still very new to these conversations we're having. What does that mean to you, to hold space, to hold energy?
I love that question. Thank you for asking. I mean, I'm glad we're getting around to this, right? Because it is important. For me, holding space means, the way that you are managing yourself and the way that you are communicating, and not just in a verbal way, right? In your body language, in your eye contact, whatever you are doing, however you are in your body, however you are in the room, is something that's supportive and not necessarily in a like coddling or enabling way. Because I can think of, there's so much talk, especially with this administration and things that are being dismantled, right? There's so much talk around things that are like super hot topics for people. And it can be hard, and there can be grief showing up talking about racism, right? Or sexism. And I think holding space for me is constructive in the sense that it doesn't mean you just tell somebody, oh, you're going to be okay. It's if they're struggling with accountability, that you can be there and tell them keep going through it. And it's also the sense of, how do I want to describe this? It's the sense of having congruency between what you're telling people, but then also how your body language is, right? Like if you're going like, yeah, sure, you can say anything, and you cross your arms, you have the scowl on your face, it's like that doesn't create safety because you're lying, like, so you have to be able to be, to me, holding space means being able to be supportive, and it's honestly what you can do, right? Like I can't hold space for everybody, right? Like there are some people who've done things where it's like, I don't want to hold space for you. I'm not available. I don't have the capacity
Ready.
to do that, right? Somebody else hopefully does, right? So it's not that I think that holding space is about having the skill set, which means we can sit with every possible scenario. I think that that's like not reasonable. Like, I don't think that that's a realistic aspiration, personally. I think it's much better to recognize what I can do as a person, what I'm available for, and then also recognize like, wow, this is not, maybe I'm really triggered. Maybe I feel, just not at a capacity where I can show up. But holding spaces, yeah, having that congruency to support people in whatever they're doing, and it's genuine. It's not a like, yeah, keep talking, I'm fine, but I'm falling asleep. Or, everything's great, but I'm clearly uncomfortable. So, yeah.
I feel like as you're saying these things, in so many ways, particularly I'm just thinking about the States because that's where I've lived most of my life, those are things that we don't commonly talk about, pay attention to, having the capacity. I do because I had the good fortune of entering the domestic violence movement 24, 25 years ago, where that's all we do is these conversations and philosophize and like talk about capacity and holding space and da da da. These are very new conversations for
For
people
sure.
in the
For
States
sure.
outside of certain circles. And so this grief conversation, again, it's just like another one of those conversations that a lot of us just don't have the capacity to recognize, to understand.
Another way I think that for people who aren't familiar with like what is holding space or what does that mean, if you another like examples can be looking at rituals, right? That they are containers that are designed for like, now we have a moment to do this thing and we're all here and we're all letting that happen and we're all okay with it. And now we have this thing, and however it is in whatever sort of like cultural space, religious space, whatever, the container is there. And hopefully, usually, the people facilitating it are ones who are genuinely in that capacity, who can hold that in an honest way. And when it's the space for we're all going to sing this song, that we do this thing. And then when it's the space that the moment when someone is talking or, whatever it is, that we do experience these things and we do have them, but in those spaces, we're not often describing them in that way,
Oh, 100%.
right?
100%. I mean, when my mom passed, there's the ritual obviously of people bringing food, right? That's that is the ritual. People come, they stay with you for a while, then they go back. But one of the things that really stood out to me was, so she passed on a Monday, and then that Tuesday, her friends were like, "We're coming to take you to breakfast." And I didn't have a choice. "We'll be at your house at 9 o'clock. And you're driving."
Oh my goodness.
Fine. They're elders. That I'm gonna do what the elders tell me to do most of the time. So I'm picking them up, I'm doing the things, and I'm like, "Oh, this is how our elders do death. This is how our elders do death. Like they show up, they do the things, they take you to breakfast, they tell you stories about your mom that you didn't know." Right? It's like these are the rituals that just happen. And we just don't call them rituals.
But they are.
They a
They
hundred.
don't have to, rituals don't have to be sanctioned by some governing
No.
authority figure or something.
No. Me getting up and making my coffee in the morning, that's my
That's a
morning.
ritual.
That's
Yeah,
what we do.
absolutely.
So much of this is like demystifying these conversations, people who aren't engaged in them all the time.
Yeah, and I think there are, unfortunately, there are a lot of institutions where they have been very toxic or harmful or whatever. And so when that gets associated with ritual, people can get averse to it and it makes sense. If that's your idea, if for me as a child, ritual space, when I thought about it in like a church way, it was really unpleasant. It was not a place where I felt safe. It was not a place where I was supported. It was a space where like kids were actively like hurting me, physically. And so my sort of coping mechanism at the time was I have to make my own. I need to go out in the woods and do something else because I like this idea of ritual space,
Yeah.
but I can't have it be something that's only in this institution that doesn't feel good for me, you know, that isn't
Absolutely.
safe for me.
Absolutely.
But just, I'm saying that just in the sense of like normalizing it for listeners, as far as this is something that you're probably already doing,
Yeah.
and it doesn't have to be affiliated with
Yeah.
a big structural thing.
No, I've been paying attention to, because I'm here in Montreal, and every morning I hear sweeping outside. At first I was like, what is that? What's going on? Is something, what's happening? And I didn't even look outside. So I was like, somebody is sweeping their balcony. And then this morning, they were sweeping the street. The street sweeper people were going by, like the machine, the person, truck. But then there was an elderly man out there sweeping the street. And I was like, now this is interesting, because in hoodoo, in Southern Black culture, my grandmother used to like do that. And I had to become an adult to understand, oh, this is a hoodoo practice as well, where you're sweeping your step, you're sweeping off the energy from whatever the night before or
Right, like your
whatever.
entryways and right.
Yeah, it's like we just kind of do things and we don't always put names to them, which I think has its positives and its
Yeah, absolutely.
as well.
Absolutely.
It would be
Yeah, I
nice if we
agree.
could name some of these things.
Yeah, but I think for me it's you know, ultimately, I mean, name whatever you want, right?
Yeah.
Call something a ritual, don't call it a ritual, like whatever you want to do is fine, but I think recognizing that they're always available, right?
Exactly.
This is not something that you have to get permission for. This is not
Yeah.
something that like an authority figure in an institution like allows you or bestows upon you,
Yeah.
right? That this is a space you can claim if you want at
Yeah.
any time.
Yeah. We've been talking on the podcast a lot about grief as a portal.
Because
And
it is.
yes, so I'd
You're so
love
smart.
to. I'm like,
You're
you're
right.
just a smile. But what do you think it's a portal to?
Your questions are so good.
Oh,
I think it's a portal to everything.
good. Thank you. Oh.
I mean, really. It because again, like what I was saying before is I think that grief kind of cuts across our whole experience, right? Because we grieve things that we love,
Yeah.
right? When we lose something like, you know, a person or a situation or whatever, and it isn't important to us and we don't like it, it's usually not a huge deal,
Yeah.
right? Like big deal, you know,
Yeah.
so what? You know, if I had some really awful neighbor who moved away, I'd be like, oh well,
Yeah.
bye. You know,
Yeah.
there's nothing to grieve. So grief for me is a facet of love, and love is everything. Love is connected to all things. So then grief is this portal connected to love. So stepping into it allows us to be more deeply in love, in the sense of connected to love, right?
Yeah.
And I get into that a lot in my book, you know, realizing like the losses, the personal stuff, the kind of collective stuff I was witnessing, and then also this friend, all of these ways that I allowed grief to really kind of at a certain point really like take over my life, in the sense of I felt like I didn't have anything left to do but grieve. You know, like I didn't have the energy for anything else. But what I realized is it was attuning me and keeping me connected to love and my capacity to love. That if I wasn't willing to grieve, then I'm not going to be available for anything. You know, I can I'm and I think that that's true about anything in life, right? Like
Yeah.
if you're unwilling to be sad, if you're unwilling to be uncomfortable, if you're, you know, whatever you step away from, it's all connected. So you're stepping away from your life force, from your experiences that you can have. But I think grief is also a portal in the sense of, in this culture that you and I live in, broadly speaking, because we're very grief illiterate, because we don't have a lot of ritual spaces, because we're not really taught and kind of directly or indirectly taught how to hold space, we're so inept, you know, and we don't have these ways. So grief, I think, for a lot of people is this portal in the sense of, at a certain point, you can't compartmentalize it, right? You can't, you know, if you're having like a tough time at work, that's sort of a compartmentalized thing, right? You can still hopefully go home and have a social, you know, there are other things going on, but grief is an experience that kind of It bleeds into everything.
It's into everything.
Right. So then it's this portal, because if you've been avoiding, and that was definitely me, like when I was in my 20s, I definitely was avoiding certain things and avoiding, intimacy with relationships and friendships. I was avoiding vulnerability. I was avoiding expressing myself fully. And then there are these moments of grief where it rips it all apart so much that it's this portal into, if you can step into grief, then you can start stepping into a lot of other things that you might be avoiding, I think.
Absolutely. It's a portal. It's a teacher. You talked about love. Are there any other lessons that you think dealing with grief taught you?
Gosh, so many.
I know.
I think, kind of going back to the very beginning, we were talking about scars. I think what it's taught me is, I think that grief kind of is the scarring process in a certain way. And it can mark you, right? The way that an accident could, or something like that. And that it's okay. And it just, because scars are something that your body does by design, because it's a healing process. And then it stays there. And obviously there's like severe example, but just generally speaking, like a scar is something you have, and it's just there. It doesn't mean there's anything flawed with you. It means your body's working, and you go on living. And so the sense of not being afraid of those scars, or being afraid of what they represent, and for me, like being so visible with some of the things that I've been through, like writing a book about long COVID was not really ever on a life bingo card for me. It was really scary to kind of be that public about it and feel like, oh, I'm telling people about this like energetic mark, in a sense, this like scar in my life, but that it's okay. This is actually what I'm like, this is what humans are meant to do, is we go through terrible experiences and we have ways of healing, and there are ways to keep going. But whether those are available, it's all about what's available, what you're taught, what's.
Do you feel like there are cultures that you've seen that are culturally literate
Absolutely.
and do it well?
I think that the US is actually kind of an anomaly in the sense of doing it badly, because it's such a young culture. And one of the things I like about the US is that it is so diverse, but also within that there's not like cohesion, and I think a lot of like ritual spaces and these like kind of collective ways of being and moving come from like shared similarities, right? And it's not an excuse. Like, we can definitely get over that. We understand, like, we have the capacity to transcend our differences. But yeah, I think, I've been to a lot of various ritual spaces and places over the years, and even within the US, right? And like certain cultural groups or religious groups. And I do see it, right? And not all of those spaces necessarily feel like they're right for me, where I would be able to really show up in the ways that I'd want to. But that's okay. Like, not everything has to be for everybody. But yeah, it definitely exists. And I think but it's a challenge in the US for sure, broadly speaking.
Well, I'm wondering about the space that we have in the US, and I'm wondering about like how we take care of our dead now versus how we used to, and other cultures that like they leave their dead in the house and people, right? They're much closer to death, and a lot of them have more conflict. I mean, this is a conflict. I mean, this is a conflict region too. It's just not like
For sure.
it's a different kind of conflict, but there's something about maybe like the separation that we have from certain things that I really hadn't thought about until this conversation, like the way we live our lives. Like I live alone in my apartment. we are able to have certain things that kind of separate us from
Right.
ways of living that other people don't have.
For sure. For
Yeah.
sure. Yeah, I mean, it's a very different, and I don't want to, I don't want to sound like I'm being nostalgic for like earlier eras that had their own problems and whatever, right? So like being aware of that, I think, you know, it's something that you can really see in the last few generations, like on this continent, especially for a lot of us where we don't live intergenerationally anymore. I mean, my mother grew up in a multi-generational household, you know, and with another language being spoken. And, you know, that was like the upstairs neighbors were family, the people across the street were family, the people around the block, you know, there was a much more cohesive sort of broad family unit, right? Not just immediate family. And I think when there are just more people around, you get to see these things. You get to see birth, you get to see death, you get to, you know, it's all interconnected, you
Same.
know, because when you have a space, when you are able to hold space in whatever way for death, you're also holding it for birth, you're holding it for graduations, you're holding it for all these milestones, right? And so death is sort of one facet of that. But
It's really, I definitely agree with you. Like, I grew up knowing my great grandmother, thank goddess. My father grew up in a inter I mean my grandparent on my father's side, they're Jamaican, so it was very intergenerational in the house, like aunts, uncles, grandparents, like everybody was just living in a big old house. And I live alone, right? And I'm not even in the same country. So it's also something about like being able to just like pick up and separate.
And, you know, there sometimes can be a really big blessing in that. Like I definitely know people whose families of origin were, you know, abusive or super toxic. And so, again, like I'm not trying to be nostalgic
But
of
that's
like
where I
that's the
was going
best way to
next.
live,
No,
right?
it's
Like,
exactly
you
right. It's
know,
a
it's
fit.
like it's a wonderful, it's an amazing, can be an amazing opportunity for people to be
Absolutely.
able to move away and get out of,
Absolutely.
you know, harmful situations or just unsupportive
Absolutely.
situations. So it's, you know, it's not a one or the other,
That's
right?
right. That's exactly where I was going to go next because it's exactly right. Like, we have the benefit now of separation.
And that can be
Choosing family
healthier than staying for a lot of people.
and choosing our family and choosing our rituals and creating, like, there's a lot of possibilities now that they.
And it's nice to see, I think, more and more that we're stepping out of this idea of family as the nuclear family with like, you know, the very colonial idea, this like very rigid, narrow, tiny definition of the cishet couple with the children and that's family, you know, and people really expanding that definition to mean all kinds of folks and
Absolutely.
animals and whatever, you know, that because we do need those spaces. We do need family in some way. It doesn't have to be the cishet nuclear
That's right.
unit
That's
with a
right.
minivan or whatever, but it does need to be something, you
Yeah,
know.
it needs to be something.
It needs something. But that could, you know, there are infinite possibilities with that.
I love that. So you also have an album.
I do.
Yeah, tell me about it.
So do you know what the synchronous fireflies are? Have you heard of
No.
synchronous fireflies?
Nope.
Okay. But you know what fireflies are, right?
Yes,
Like
of course.
out at
Yes,
night in the
yes.
summer, usually or warmer weather.
Yeah.
So synchronous fireflies are fireflies,
Okay.
but they flash at the same time, not in like everybody's on, everybody's off, everybody's on, but when you go to places with synchronous fireflies, they'll all be flashing for like 6 or 8 seconds, let's say. And
Okay.
then they all stop for a few seconds. And then they all start flashing again, you know, in their own pattern. And then they all stop. So that's what the synchronous part means. It doesn't literally mean everybody lights up, everybody, you know, turns off. But it's really beautiful. It's one of the most just fascinating, magical things I think I've ever encountered in my life. And I'm a synesthete, which means like my senses sort of blur. So that's a visual experience, like seeing the fireflies, but it's also something that I hear. So I made the album as the representation of like my sonic experience of the fireflies that probably most people don't have.
Okay, first of all, what is synesthesia? What is that?
Synesthesia, yeah.
What is that? I've never heard of that. I love this.
Synesthesia is the way that I describe it. I mean, this is not like a clinical,
Okay.
academic definition. The way that I describe it is it's when your senses kind of bleed across each other and the boundaries are sort of blurred. So for example, for most people or the standard idea is like red is a color, right? Red is a visual experience. But for some people, like for a synesthete, red can be a like physical, like textural experience, or red can be a sonic experience, or red can be a smell. So it's this sense of hearing a color, right? Or smelling a sound, right? It sounds
Those seem
wacko.
delicious. Like, I want to be a synesthete.
Well, the thing, and so the other
Wow.
thing about it that I tell people is sometimes I think that there are ways to kind of temporarily experience it, like especially if you've done hallucinogenics or
That's what I was saying. I'm
psychedelics.
like, oh, yeah.
Yeah. Then like you know,
Yeah,
people
been
talk about
there.
like you can play music and they
Yeah.
see stuff, right? So it's like that,
Yeah.
but like a lot, like that's kind of my, and I get into this a little bit actually in my book because I talk about it in the context of chronic pain.
Okay.
But it's this very full spectrum experience of life, like all the time, because you're seeing things, but you also might be hearing them, or you hear things, but you're also seeing them.
Got it.
So it's a very full-on experience.
And you, so I am so curious about these fireflies, FYI. I'm like, where can I see them?
In a few places, the really famous one, the one that I've been to, is in Tennessee in the Smoky Mountains National Park. And yeah, and there's just this very short window of time that they're, because it's basically their breeding season. And so the fireflies there, the males are the ones that are flying around and they're all flashing all at once, and then they all stop. And then in that time when they're dark, they're actually looking at the ground, and the females are on the ground lighting back, but it's too dim for us to see.
Like it.
So
And
you don't, so like human eyes, as far as I can tell, and no one I've talked to has seen it really, but the human eye just sees the males going, and then it's totally dark,
got it.
and then they go again. But yeah, it's, you can look it up online,
I am as we're
like
speaking.
it's hard sometimes. I've tried to look for like good video, and it can be hard because you need like total darkness, but then there's not that much light, you
Yeah.
know? I will say my album cover is this wonderful photo by Radim Schreiber, who specializes in photographing the fireflies. He has a great book called The Firefly Experience, but on his website he has loads of photos, and you can kind of
Okay.
get a sense in like a still sense.
Okay. All
So it's
right.
out there. They're
Okay. We'll
special if you get a
see.
chance to go.
We'll see. We'll see. Apparently, yes, the Great Smoky Mountains. Yes, folks, you
Yep.
can see them there. For folks in Canada, we can see them at Mont Royal in
Oh.
Quebec, which is right down the street from my house.
Oh, great.
But there's not a lot of synchronous ones.
Oh, okay.
No, it's
Yeah.
probably. Yeah, no, it's mostly in the United. It's mostly in the United States. So we're frozen.
Yeah, I think there's an area in Arizona as well. But yeah. I'm fine now. Still frozen.
Yeah, are you back? You're back.
Okay.
Okay, good. Yeah.
Sorry about that.
Yeah, no, that was great. Well, thank you for that. I love
Thank you.
that. And I'm just glad to have a better understanding. So, as we come to a close of our conversation, I always like to ask people, what are they grieving and what are they grateful for today?
Thank you for asking both. Right now, for me, I think my grief is struggling with feeling like I can't do much about the things that bother me the most. The things that are like the most horrific that I'm witnessing.
Yes.
I feel, I'm doing what I can, and I do believe in like a broad sense that what we do as individuals matters. And yes, but also I'm grieving that, no one person can, no one average person like me
Yeah.
can change that,
Yes.
that it really requires the collective, which is cool, but also just on a personal level, it's hard.
Yeah.
It's hard to watch.
Yes, 100%.
And then what am I grateful for? I'm grateful for spaces like this, you know, as hokey. I don't want to sound like too hokey, but I mean, but genuinely to have these really honest conversations where it's not about, you know, making it palatable or, you know, just to be really honest.
Yeah.
Because so often I think the things that I want to do or I want to talk about are super weird or super edgy for a lot of people. So it's just nice to be like, oh, we can talk about grief and the fireflies and, you know, and synesthesia, like, and the Scar Clan. Like, it's
Yeah.
great, you know, because all of it's all connected.
It's
So,
all connected. Yeah. And how can people support you? How can people support your work?
oh, you can, for folks just anywhere, you can read my book and order my book anywhere. It is on all the platforms. Any indie bookstore can order it. So you don't have to go through, you know, a big online platform if you don't want to. I love it when people kick revenue to a local bookstore.
Beautiful.
And my album Sync Fire is on Bandcamp. And Bandcamp is a platform where you can stream things and just listen for free the way you do on all the others. And you can also like buy the actual files and have the digital copy if that's your thing.
Well, thank you so much. And I
So
hope you'll come on
much.
again and talk about
I would
more
love to.
things, more edgy
Love
things,
to.
more weird things. Love it. Love it. Thank you all again for listening. Don't forget to like, share, and do all of the things. As you know, episode drops on Tuesdays at 7:11 with bonus episodes on some Fridays. And you can find us on all the podcast platforms. And remember, if anything moved you, or if you have questions about the Fireflies or the album, or even if our conversation sparked something about grief, about your own stories, reach out, let me know, because I always say none of us deserve to be on the brink alone. I'm Zoe Flowers, and I will see you soon. Bye.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.